This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Welcome to Red Ice Radio, friends, new and regular listeners. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Sweden, Northern Europe. Wherever you are, I hope you're well, and thank you for tuning in today. This is an independent and ad-free radio program. Investigations into reality and the mysteries, the known and the unknown. We produce three radio programs per week, currently. Every other week, one of these is our latest edition, Radio 314. The latest episode is with Nathan Fraser on anarchism and sovereignty. From our website, redicecreations.com, you have links to our radio archive, Radio 314, our members' website, our mobile website, and of course, we also feature news from around this world and sometimes beyond. You can subscribe to our newsletter and our RSS feeds and let our material come directly to you. Today we have David Icke with us on the program, a man who hardly needs an introduction, but in case you need to refresh your memory, he's a British author. He's written 20 books and traveled to over 55 countries since 1990. His books reveals how a hidden hand is behind world-changing events like the attacks of 9/11 and the manufactured wars in the Middle East, as a part of a mass mind manipulation technique that he has dubbed Problem Reaction Solution. While being controversial and often heavily attacked, David Icke has driven on with his unrelentless investigation into subject areas that others don't dare touch. He reveals information that has been kept from a dumbed-down population and has allowed the establishment to treat them as nothing more than slaves to a sinister hidden agenda. David returns today to give us a peek into his upcoming presentation at Wembley Arena, going deeper down the rabbit hole than anyone's gone before. We'll discuss the limitations of conspiracy research and the need to move beyond the aspects of the five senses. David explains how reflex action hinders a truly open mind. We'll also talk about the death of a showman, Jimmy Savile, a grotesque pedophile, a necrophiliac, a close friend of Prince Philip, and one of Britain's most famous characters. Some very disturbing information about this have been coming out in the last few weeks, and we'll go into it and talk about the bigger connections with David. Hi, David. Welcome back to the program. It's good to talk to you again. Hope you're doing well and, of course, gearing up for the big event at Wembley in about a week from now. So it's nice to talk to you again, David. Hi.
Thanks, Henrik. Yeah, it's been a while, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's been over a year, is it? I think something like that. I haven't looked at the schedule yet, but I think so.
But things are going well. It's funny, really, because we booked the Wembley Arena and in February and seemed a long way away when it was, really. Something like 8 months, wasn't it? But it's getting close now and time seems to be moving quicker. But I'm looking forward to it. It's been a long time reaching this point, and let's see what comes of it.
Yeah, it's the biggest event you've done, I think. Have you any idea so far about how many people are going to attend or be there?
Well, we booked a seating arrangement in February for 5,500 people, and we're going to pretty much have 5,500 people, and with a week to go. There's still some tickets left, but pretty much we're on the way to certainly five, but possibly the whole lot, 5,500 people. And also we're streaming it live on the internet worldwide, so there's the infinite number of people that can watch it around the world. Just makes the choice of choosing to watch it. But I would say to people, anyone who is going to watch the streaming is, the people in the arena itself, they'll be doing this as a matter of course. But anyone around the world who is going to watch it, please watch it from the start to the finish. There are breaks, obviously. I don't talk for, it'll be about 9.5 hours of information I'll be delivering, but I won't be talking for 9.5 hours. There'll be breaks, about 2.5 hours of time. But it's a massive work of dot connecting and strand connecting to build the picture, to build the tapestry. And the first 2.5 hours are absolutely vital to everything that follows. And therefore, if people are going to watch it, it's not something to dip in and out of. Because if you do, you'll hear some interesting things. But in terms of the big connection, which is going to put the world we daily live in a totally different context, and indeed this whole conspiracy that we talk so much about in a whole deeper context. But it has to be watched from start to finish for that to happen. And in the last section, I mean, you know, we've got lots of music, and we're going to kind of wind the energy up and really, you know, take the roof off energetically. So it's a multi-leveled event, and not just hard information, though that's the basis of it, obviously, but also where we go with it, what we can do about it. And this is why it's so important to watch the whole thing, is because to understand the deeper levels of where it's coming from and what's behind it is to understand how we get rid of it, how we remove it, how we deal with it. Because if we think that we're going to deal with this within the five sense world of visible light, forget it. That's like trying to change a movie by changing the movie screen or changing what's on the movie screen. You're not going to do that. You've got to go to the back of the theater and change the reel. You've got to change where it's coming from, because the screen is just a projection of where it's coming from. And this is why I'm going into so many deep areas at Wembley next week and connecting them, because it not only shows where it's actually coming from, ultimately, it's showing, therefore, what we can do about it at the source of where it's coming from. Because at the moment, so much conspiracy research is, and it's right that it should be. I mean, I do it all the time. I've been doing it for 25 years nearly. But it's on the five sense level of the play out world of banking and business. And it's important to know all about that. Absolutely it is. But if we only know about that, we are literally researching and writing about the movie screen rather than what's being projected or where it's being projected from. And thus we are more like movie correspondents and movie critics rather than actually getting deep, deep into where it's coming from and thus being able to change the reel.
Changing our destiny, making the movie instead of just passively sitting and watching it, right?
I'm going to go into that, Henrik, because it's a fascinating area of how we are being manipulated to create the movie. And if we know how that's being done, then we can stop creating the movie for those that are manipulating us to do it. It's deep stuff, but it's not like out there and, oh, what's he talking about? It's real simple, but the simple nature of it comes by connecting the dots and looking at the real nature of so-called physical reality. Then it can be simply explained what's going on, how it's being done, and thus how we can stop it being done. Because we're not going to stop it by piling and stockpiling weapons and all the rest of it. And what I hear some people talk, it's not going to happen. We need to get to source, and the source is what I'll be talking about and revealing at Wembley.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to some of those who have, let's say we have someone who has a hard time to believe these more hidden aspects of reality? It depends on what outlook they have on life, and if they're a believer, I guess, even in the so-called rational scientific approach to all this. But let's say that they're looking for evidence but having a hard time to find it, or they haven't even had these experiences for themselves, tapping into something that's been occulted to them.
Well, I think that one of the most profound and powerful ways of keeping people in the box, keeping people in a perception prison, is to dictate and manipulate their sense of the possible. It's that simple. Because if you can suppress and dilute someone's sense of the possible, it means that anything that is actually happening outside of their sense of the possible is by reflex action dismissed as crazy, impossible. For instance, and that means when you've got a suppressed sense of the possible, that you do not have an alternative to the lie most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For instance, if your sense of the possible does not at least encompass the possibility that people can be mind manipulated to go crazy with guns, or at least be in the wrong place at the wrong time from their point of view so they can be blamed for it while someone else actually does it. If you can't encompass the possibility of that possibility, then when the government says this guy's gone crazy with a gun in a theater, even though the witnesses say there was more than one gunman, when they say that this guy's gone crazy lone guy Wade Page in a Sikh temple in Wisconsin, although witnesses again said there were multiple shooters, but if you can't encompass the fact that someone could be mind controlled to do that, to bring about a situation that leads to changes in society as a result of what they've done, then when the government says this was a lone nut, then you have no alternative to the lie. So all the time, collectively and individually, our sense of the possible is being squeezed. Now, Henrik, I see this all over the conspiracy research arena. That's why, you know, I'm a kind of maverick within mavericks in so many ways, because so many so-called mainstream, credible, left-brain intellectual people within the conspiracy research movement dismiss what I say and dismiss me as a person and dismiss me as in any way credible, because I'm talking about things happening and being behind this ultimately that are outside their sense of the possible. Because if you have an open mind, then you are open to all possibility. It doesn't mean that you're going to believe everything or anything just because it's there.
Sure.
No, of course, you question it. You check it out. You research it and all the rest of it. But the point is, you do not dismiss it by reflex action. No more research. In fact, no research at all, nothing. It's just outside your sense of the possible. Thus, it cannot be real. And anyone talking about it, they must by definition be crazy or trying to have people on. And thus, the conspiracy research, to a very large extent, while it does a great job within the area that it operates often, is still a belief system that has walls around it. And so they will, it's ironic really, that they will see the mainstream of people who dismiss any idea of a conspiracy as asleep and close-minded, and they say to them, open your mind. But open your mind how far, mate? As far as you've opened it, there's a conspiracy within five-sense reality and banking and politics and manipulated wars and terrorist events. So that far, or do they have permission to really, really open their minds to possibilities beyond that? Oh, no. If you go beyond my sense of the possible, then you must be wrong. So all this is going on all the time. And it's like a holographic kind of situation where every part of the whole is a smaller version of the whole. While the whole, in terms of mainstream society, may have a much more suppressed sense of the possible and sense of, you know, what is happening. And someone here who's doing a bit some conspiracy research might have a slightly wider perception of the possible. They still have walls around their sense of the possible. And once you do that, then you're in a box. It might be a slightly bigger box than the people that you're trying to wake up, but it's still a box.
Yeah.
I had said this many years ago. If you can tell me what you believe, if you can give me a name to what you believe, you're in a box. Because if you have a truly open mind, truly open heart, and access innate intelligence, then you do not have a name that you can give to what you believe, because you actually don't believe anything. See, people find it difficult when I say to them, I don't believe anything. Oh, but you say this, yeah, but I don't believe it in the sense of it being stuck in stone. What I have at any point in time is a perception of how things are. But I know that given we live in the forever of infinity, that whatever I know, there is always vastly more to know. Thus, you know, I've got me trainers on, and I'm dancing on the spot, and I'm looking for the next move to push the cutting edge of my understanding, because I know that whatever I know, there's always more to know. So rather than have a belief system, you have a sense of perception of how things are at this point. But you know that by tomorrow or a few days hence, if you're really open-minded, then something will come along to push you a bit further. Your overall themes might still be pretty much the same, but you're a bit more understanding of this bit of detail, bit that, and everything starts to move and continues to move. And you know, it's staggering to me. I say to people, take a deep breath, take a step back, look at it again, because people can get so focused on dots, so focused on the constant bombardment of repeating bloody information that they receive, can't see the obvious. And look at it this way. Look out, even, and there's a lot more to know about this, which I'll go into at Wembley, I'll tell you. But look out at the night sky, and you look out of all those lights and all the rest of it. You look at the depth of what is seen to exist, at least at some level, within this universe alone. And you're telling me, given that that is just a tiny frequency band called visible light within the great infinity of forever, you're telling me, Mr. Christian, you're telling me, Mr. Muslim, you're telling me, Mr. Whoever, Mr. Judaism, that all I need to know about the infinity of reality is between the covers of one book written by who knows who, often who knows when, in who knows what circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You put it in that stage, in that scale, it is insane. It is ludicrous to believe that that is all we need to know. And there's a great deal of conspiracy research, particularly in the United States, which is still locked in to those two covers, you know. And thus, those two covers act as a ball and chain when it comes to understanding the greater infinity of knowledge that's waiting to be tapped into. And also, you know, although there might not be a conspiracy Bible written, five-sense level conspiracy Bible, it does exist in the minds of so many, in that, you know, this is how it is. You know, it's just the Bilderberg Group and secret societies, and it's the Rothschilds, and it's the royal families of Europe, and it's all of those things. But it ain't only those things. They are still the oil rags of the whole thing. They're still the people playing it out. They're not the origin of it.
Yeah.
And that's when you really need to take the lid off the mind and let it go where the music and the information takes you, and not censor yourself by your rigid belief.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, if we think about reality as being, well, maybe belief is the wrong word then, but it's driven to some extent by what we believe is possible. I mean, human history is evident of this. I mean, whoever had an idea or a belief that, you know, that they were going to be able to capable of do something, change something, invent something, let's say, I mean, there's this legend, right, about this one guy who wanted to close the patent office back in the, was it late 1800s or something like that? Because, you know, everything has been invented already, so it's no point in having it open. And so it goes back to the quote by Gary Spence, who said, I'd rather have a mind open by wonder than one closed by belief. Because that's really where we need to head, I think, if we want to get out of the rut we're in, David. Everything from free energy to new inventions that to a certain extent could help to, you know, liberate mankind or free us extensively a little bit, at least. That's where it's at. It's in people's imagination. We have to think it's possible to be able to even try to make it possible, right?
Yeah. It's, for me, it's your point of attention. If someone says to me, who are we? I would reply, we are a point of attention. Now, that point of attention can be fractional, and you can think that you are Charlie Jones, who drives a bus, or it can encompass Charlie Jones driving the bus as your current experience, but that point of attention can span into infinity. And that person will have a totally different perception of their lives and reality than someone who is so focused that all they can see is Charlie Jones driving a bus. And when I look at the conspiracy, Henrik, in its wider context, what I see is that it is trying to hijack our point of attention. So it's like, look at this, watch this, feel this, smell this, touch this. It's all five sense stuff, which is trying to entice your point of attention and hold it in the five senses. And when that becomes the entirety virtually of your sense of perception, what do the five senses lead to? What does the five sense lead to? It leads to a sense that the world is solid, because that's how it perceives and interacts with the reality as if it is. Once you perceive that things are solid, once you think that things are not fluid, then suddenly you're hitting limitation. Everything seems limited in a world you believe to be solid. And the physical world as we're told it is. Now, we know from quantum physics, never mind other things, that that's not the case. But if you look at science, it's interesting. You've got quantum physics that's showing that actually nothing is solid, and thus the reality can't be solid. But the rest of science is all founded on the fact it is, virtually.
Yeah.
And politics is founded on the fact that it is. Science is founded on the fact that it is. Medicine is founded on the fact that it is. And so, once you get pulled into that point of attention, then it's all limitation. It's all I can't. It's not possible. And you can get to a point where in that terribly limited sense of perception, you can believe there's nothing left to be invented. But when your point of attention is spanning from the five senses out into the infinite self, then everything becomes different. Now everything becomes all possibility, not limited possibility. Now there are no limits to what we can do, what we can create, what we can imagine. And this is the difference. And this is why the system, not least through education or what passes for it, and all these other institutions are actually there to hold our attention in the five senses. And once they got you there, you've had it. And the point is, on the in the areas that we've just been talking about, is the vast majority of, and I'm not knocking it, I'm not. It's great what they do, more the merrier. Yep. But the vast majority of conspiracy research is still coming from the point of perception that the world is solid. And when you do that, then when people like me start talking about entities that are not solid, that are energetically fluid, that are operating outside our visible light perception and are interacting with it through many and various ways, not least through these hybrid bloodlines that operate with invisible light and manipulate human society on their behalf, that level, still the vast majority within conspiracy research, just puts its hand up and goes, this guy's crazy. He's damaging our work. People think we're crazy because of him and all this stuff.
Right.
How about a simple thing, Henrik? How about we stop worrying about what other people think and we start pursuing the truth for the truth's sake?
Yeah.
Because that is going to lead us out of this. Certainly another level of self-censorship isn't. Another level of rigid belief system isn't. So let's give peace a chance. Let's give truth a chance. Let's give truth a chance, unfettered and unsuppressed by rigid belief and censorship, self and of others, and let's see where that takes us. Because that's what I've been doing for 20 odd years now, and I tell you, it takes you into some very interesting places that we need to go. And conspiracy research, the mainstream of it, because it does have one now, will have to go there in the end, or it will get left behind very soon. Actually, mm-hmm.
How do you think that this will? Do you think that there will be evidence coming forth more, well, let's say we can begin to peer into some of these other frequencies of light or even dimensions in that point. From that point of view, there is certain science that's being done right now to try to look into these regions of understanding more of the dimensions and stuff. Do you think that there will be things revealed in there that will further point to the evidence that there's, well, not only more beyond the eye and the five senses, but the fact that it might actually be something there that is influencing mankind and pulling its strings to one extent or another?
I think we're closer, Henrik, to that sort of thing happening than we've ever been. I'm not going to give predictions on it, but I mean, what I must say is I keep seeing, you know, scientists and stuff like that starting to say things that I go, whoa, that's more like it. And I for instance, saw some articles recently about some scientists who were talking about, well, maybe we can find evidence that the universe is a computer program. I mean, hey, right. Come on, we're starting to get there, because it's the manipulation of that program that is actually the basis of the conspiracy and human suppression. Also, in the London Daily Mail a few months ago now, could even have been just last year, but they ran a story. They've been ridiculing me for years about talking about non-human reptilian entities, and they ran this story perfectly straight about an American scientist talking about the fact that he believed that there were reptilian humanoid intelligent entities that pervaded much of the universe and were not to be messed with. And the headline was something about our lizard overlords, and they ran this story it's straight. Why? Well, it's come from a scientist, isn't it? He's credible. David Icke's been saying this and more for years, but he's mad, so we can't say it about him. And you know, it's just, oh, what's going on? So, but I am starting to see this now, and I know that, you know, on the quiet, there are scientists that look at my work and talk about my work. They won't do it publicly, obviously, because, you know, they don't want to be tainted by the image of me in the mainstream. But they do that, because the point is, and I know, you know, you look at a lot of this stuff, Henrik, and you will know the same. The point is that there's so many strands of science that have reached the cul-de-sac.
Yeah,
they've reached the end of the road with a wall on the end, because if they continue with their belief system of how everything works, then they simply cannot answer the basic questions of life. Who are we? Where are we? What is the nature of reality? They can't do it. And this is why there are more and more scientists, nothing like the majority yet, of course, but there are more and more scientists who are starting to look at the fact that this universe has to be some kind of holographic structure in nature, because it's a way to explain all these, according to mainstream scientific belief, unexplainable things. And they're not. I mean, when I put this talk together at Wembley, there's going to be so many unsolvable mysteries drop before people's eyes. It's unbelievable. And it's going to be not some great, headache creating deep complex explanation. It's simple. It is so simple. All genius is simple. And genius is seeing the complex in the simple, and it is seeing the creative potential of the simple. If it's complex, there's always more to know. And if it's complex, you're not there yet, that's for sure. It is simple the way it all goes together. It's complex in sometimes and often in the way it all plays out and interacts with each other, but in its basic form and explanation of it all, it's dead simple. But you know, you'll know this. You know, the number of scientists you come across who they've been through the education system, they've been through the science indoctrination system, they've been pressured through funding and peer pressure to conform to the song sheet, and that basically comes together under the heading of it must be complex, it can't be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Because the left side of the brain, which they get locked into very early in life through the education system and and their own specializations. The left brain sees complexity. The right side of the brain sees simplicity. It sees the connections of everything, while this left side of the brain sees everything as apart from everything else. Thus, if you are imprisoned in the left side of the brain, and this is where the vast majority of scientists are, teachers are, academics are, doctors are, etc., journalists are, then you will not see the way everything connects. You will only see a big mass of unconnected things, and you'll look at the world with your jaw at least slightly dropped in total bewilderment, even if you think about it, saying, I don't understand how it's all fitting together and what's going on. And you are a journalist reporting the world for the public.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, education is the limitation in many regards. Not all, of course, but in most cases, I mean, mankind has, you know, gone through this kind of limitation, as you said before, where we are fairly early on in the process closed off, and we're told what is or what isn't possible. And the fact is that if we don't continue to harness those, you know, properties within our brain to see beyond what we're being told is possible, it's less of a chance that we're going to be able to go there. But I wanted to ask you, David, if you think or if you believe in some regard that mankind as a whole right now is going through some kind of transformation that maybe is beginning to balance the hemispheres a little bit of the brain, that the cycles of our own progression, if you will, is somewhat reflected in a greater cycle maybe that's going through or pulsating through the universe right now. Some people believe this, that we're like actually on the cusp of having our eyes opened literally because of other forces in our universe. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, this connects into the point you made earlier when you asked about whether more stuff's going to come out through scientists and what have you to show that things are not like they thought it was. When I had my own initial awakening, because people say I woke up. No, you didn't. You started to wake up. We're all in the process of awakening. I mean, you know, the possibility of awakening, expansion of point of attention, is infinity. So you're not awake until you've awakened to infinity, a possibility, and all that stuff. And, you know, we are awakening. So when I had my initial conscious awakening, and the head of top of my head blew off in 1991, around that time, what came into my life through various means was that there was a energetic transformation coming, which I gave the name to of the Truth Vibrations. It was the name of the first book I ever wrote on this. I wrote it in 1990. And that it was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock. It was going to wake people up. The people who were less asleep were going to be consciously touched by it first, but then again, then eventually it was going to be picking off more and more deeply asleep, in other words, deeply more energetically density suppressed, and it was going to awaken the world. And of course, what was that 23 years ago nearly? There was no evidence of it. Of course there wasn't at that time. But as I watched this unfold through the years since to present time, that's exactly what's happening. There is this awakening, and I'm seeing it. I was talking to a journalist today, a mainstream journalist who was absolutely into it, because it's two things are happening. Well, three things if you add the one of the results of it. First of all, the world has reached the point, if you're looking at the conspiracy level and the direction of the world level in the five sense world, it's reached the point increasingly when anyone with a mind on active duty cannot possibly not see that we're going into a very dark and dangerous direction in terms of human control, human surveillance, and human imposition. So it's not some theory anymore. It's not some time over the rainbow anymore. It's actually happening. It's being announced by politicians. It's being announced on the television news. At the same time, after all these years, we've reached a point, not least thanks to the internet, where there is an enormous amount of information to explain, at least in the five sense arena, what's behind this direction the world's clearly taking. There are two things that we weren't seeing before. And then the third one is what we're talking about. There's no question in my experience, my observation, all over the world, by the way, not just in the West, that people are being, from within, instinctively, intuitively pushed to look at things they wouldn't look at before, to not dismiss them as they would dismiss them before. It's happening. I mean, you know, I see it all the time in people that correspond with me, people that stop me in the street, people stop you in the street and talk to you, and they're people you might have known for years, and they were closed-minded as hell and, you know, concrete encompassed, and now they're talking about all the stuff and they want to know more, and you know, it's happening. So yes, and people in science and people in these institutions that the system uses to suppress and to misdirect and misinform, they're not immune from being touched by this vibrational change, this information change. And so, yes, it is happening. And you see, I've been saying, you know, all along, I didn't buy the whole 2012 story. For me, 2012 significance is that it's not 2011, but it's not 2013 or 14 either. This truth vibrations is coming in. It's getting more powerful. It's getting more influential. It's touching more people. And I don't know whether you've noticed this, mate, but it's clearer and clearer to me that there is a parting of the ways here, because I'm seeing more and more people touched by this and opening in their minds, at least to some extent, to what they would have dismissed or not even thought about before. But on the other hand, I'm seeing those that are not being touched by it because they're not vibrationally in sync with it, who are getting pulled more and more into the system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
More closed, more and more concrete. Whereas these other people are becoming more and more open. So it's an interesting time. And what I kind of understood was the game, what was going to happen in those early 90s and stuff is actually happening. This is not a parting of the ways between the chosen and the not chosen. This is a parting of the ways between those who have opened their mind. It's a choice to this vibrational impact and vibrational change, and those who are repelling all borders to it. It's a choice, and you know, those at the moment that are getting pulled more and more into the system, they can come out of it whenever they choose. You know, it's just a choice. And what the system's trying to do is to hijack our point of attention, to hijack our perception of the world, and to throw so many emotionally charged, emotionally disrupting situations at us that we get pulled into fear, into anxiety, into anger, into hatred, into resentment, because they are very low vibrational states. And if you get pulled into them, you are these truth vibrations, as I call them, are going to pass you by. And that's the idea. You know, it's like I said earlier, mate, you know, beyond the presidents and the bankers and the royal families and all these people, beyond the Rothschilds, although they're fully aware that the inner circle of the Rothschilds and people like that, what they're connecting to. But beyond that is this unseen force, which understands all these things, which understands that the nature of reality, up to an extent it understands it, is energetic. And thus, if they can pull you into a low vibrational emotional state, they're pulling you into a level of vibrational density, which disconnects you from your greater self and focuses your point of attention upon five sense reality and into a mode of survival. This is why they want us in a situation where people are fearing surviving physically. They're fearing surviving in terms of economics and paying the rent, fear of their job surviving and all this stuff. And all this fear of not surviving pulls you in to this low vibrational state. It's all being systematically done.
Yeah. The system is getting more rigid. It's getting paranoid and fierce. And I think they will throw anything at us, kind of collectively, if you will, to draw us back to their attention for those who manage to disconnect. And I mean, again, just like they've done in the past with false flag terrorism, it's they need to show us why we need them, so to speak. And they will do anything to uphold this illusion, to kind of justify their existence and justify, again, their paranoid fierceness that they're now beginning to show, because it's getting, well, beyond ridiculous at this point, I think. I mean, from 9/11 and onwards, it's like we've gone into a nightmare with all these systems and the way the economics and the politics are heading. It's looking pretty grim, actually, right now.
It is. But I think, you know, in many ways, we are seeing a system in its death throes. But you know, again, humanity has a choice. There's 7 billion of us. The number of people in full awareness of what they're doing, as opposed to people being used without the knowledge of the ultimate goal, is very, very, very small compared with 7 billion. Tiny, almost infinitesimal compared with 7 billion.
Yeah.
But it's, again, focusing attention on the five sense level of reality. That's what happens when you are worried about paying the rent, you're worried about your job, you're worried about your family. These are all five sense situations. And that's the idea, to pull us into that.
That's the system they want us to be in, that state, right? Because that's ultimately beneficial to them, because then we're in their world, we're in their belief system that they have set up, and we have very few options of seeing something else, of getting outside of that box, that reality that has been created and invented for us.
Exactly. Say you get on a train and you're going, I don't know, from Stockholm to somewhere, and you've got a book or a newspaper, and you sit in your seat and you're focused on your newspaper and you focus on your book. An hour, 2 hours later, that train has taken you through endless landscapes, endless locations, endless situations to see through the window. There are probably things being going on in the carriage around you that you've not noticed because you've been focused on the book and the newspaper. You've been through stations. You've been through towns. You've been through different states of weather, probably. But it's all passed you by.
Yeah.
You've been focused on one thing, and this is what they want us to do, to so focus on. Like I've said many times, they don't care if we have a belief or what our belief is, so long as we have a belief and it's rigid and it focuses our attention. Doesn't matter if it's your family alone, your football team alone, your hobby alone, your career alone, as long as you are focused very powerfully on one thing, because then the rest of the world passes you by. And it's in that peripheral vision, which you lose when you focus completely on one point of attention, that all the manipulation's going on. So when you have a much greater range of attention, then you can focus on a task, if you like, on one thing. But at the same time, because you've got a much wider range of attention, you can observe the peripheral vision area as well as that which you're actually focusing on at the time. It can be done, but not when you're focused only on the five senses. That can only see the dot, but you can focus on a dot and you can see the greater picture. For instance, people like me, dot connectors and what have you, doing it all the time, because I might be focused for an hour or a day on 9/11 or some banking situation, but all the time I'm focused on it, I know it that connects into a great web of which it is only a dot. It is not the web itself. It is not everything. It is part of everything. And we can do this in life if we have this range of attention rather than focused pinhead attention, which is what the system wants. I mean, you know, look at the education system. I came across this list of things, absolutely brilliant, about what school teaches us. It teaches us one: truth comes from authority. Because the teacher, you come out the womb And in very little time, smaller and smaller amounts of time now with preschool and all that stuff, there's someone standing up in front of you as an authority figure telling you when you can, when you have to be there, when you can leave, what you do while you're there, and all the rest of it. Preparing you to be an adult in which the greater authority does the same and you conform to it because you've known nothing else. Intelligence is the ability to remember and repeat. That's exactly what it is. That's not intelligence. That is memory of what someone else has told you to believe. Three, accurate memory and repetition are rewarded. Yeah. You remember what we've told you to believe and you repeat it on the exam paper. We'll say you've passed and people will go, oh, you got great grades. And then four, non-compliance is punished. Challenge the authority figure at the front of the classroom. Don't agree with them. Refuse to do what they say because you don't agree with it. And there's a punishment. And five, conform intellectually and socially because that's the easiest way to get by without hassle and upset. That's what it's teaching you. It is a way of preparing young people to become the adult slaves for the rest of their life. And I came across this. You know this guy. He's got some great quotes. H.L. Mencken. He said, the aim of public education is not to spread enlightenment at all. It is simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level, to breed a standard citizenry, to put down dissent and originality. That's exactly what it is. And I came across a study at the College of William and Mary in Virginia recently, where a guy called Kyung-hee Kim, professor of education, did a study with others on the personality changes and perception changes of school-aged children between kindergarten and 12th grade. And what they found in the study, very, very interesting, though not surprising, that in that period from kindergarten to 12th grade, there was a massive decline of creativity as, quote, children have become less emotionally expressive, less energetic, less talkative and verbally expressive, less humorous, less imaginative, less unconventional, less lively and passionate, less perceptive, less apt to connect seemingly relevant things, in other words, connect dots, less synthesizing and less likely to see things from a different angle. That's what it is. It's it's a programming machine. Wow. And one of the greatest things that people can do, young people can do, is reject it.
That's right.
Reject. Because if you don't, or at least go into it with the conscious awareness of what it's trying to do to you, thus you can repel it if you do that and stop it doing it. But if you go in with your guard down, thinking that it's trying to serve you and make you cleverer, then, you know, you're a lamb to the slaughter.
That's right. David, I want to shift focus just a little bit here in the last 10, 15 minutes or so that we have here. And I wanted to ask you about the business of this Jimmy Savile in the UK right now. I've only peripherally kind of read about this. And how does this tie into the larger picture of what's going on right now?
Well, this was fascinating to me when this came out, because I've been talking about this guy, Jimmy Savile, being a pedophile and a necrophiliac. He used to have a thing about sex with dead people. For many years, back to the late 90s. And of course, you know, Ike's a nutter and all that stuff. But a television program has just come out. He died in 2011, Jimmy Savile, at the age of 84. And a television program came out which exposed the fact that he, over a long period of time, for decades, and more's come out now. I mean, crikey, it's just exploding. This guy must, you know, been at it all the time. But he was abusing underage children, usually girls, that's come out. But actually, there's more to it than that. And he worked at the BBC. That was his main, prime point of public exposure. And he used to do a lot of charity work. He used to run marathons. He used to volunteer to be porters in hospitals. And he used to have charities to raise money for hospitals. And these hospitals would give him a room, an office, even sometimes a bedroom in the hospital. He used to do the same at a place called Broadmoor for, you know, seriously mentally disturbed people and criminals and killers as a result of their psychiatric state. And he was like seen as the national treasure. He started out in the late 50s, early 60s, when the great swinging 60s music scene started in Britain, and a new genre appeared called the disc jockey. He started out on Radio Luxembourg, this kind of iconic radio station of the 60s, and then he went into the BBC and all that stuff. And openly talked about his closeness to the British royal family. And later on in years, he would talk about the fact that he was untouchable, that there was nothing he couldn't do, and there was no one that could touch him, whatever he did, and all the rest of it. And he died, this old guy of 84, and he was given a hero's funeral. Oh, Jimmy Savile, what a great man. Good on you, Governor. Well, that's not what they're thinking now, because the dike has been breached and it's coming out. But what is coming out? At the moment, what's coming out is that he was the most serial paedophile. And also that, you know, he started his charities and did his charity work to get access to children and stuff in hospitals. Well, he did something else, as I was pointing out back in the late 90s, Henrik. He got involved with hospitals because hospitals have mortuaries.
Oh, jeez.
Satisfy his love of sex with dead bodies and stuff. I mean, this man was seriously way out there. But this is the bigger picture. And what's not coming out, but should, and I was talking to a journalist today about it, I hope something will move forward as a result of it, is the reason he was untouchable, the reason that he could do anything he liked, and that there were, over the years, police investigations started into claims of his paedophilia with underage girls, but those investigations came nowhere, was because that he wasn't just a paedophile. He was a procurer of children for the rich and famous, including the royal family. It's not a accident or coincidence that Savile, in his own words, said that he was introduced to the royal family, first of all in the 1960s, by a man called Lord Louis Mountbatten, who was a known paedophile by anyone who's investigated this. And it was Mountbatten that introduced Savile to Prince Philip and Prince Charles, and Savile became very, very close to both of them until he had a massive row, apparently, with Philip. And I was told all this in the late 90s by a lady called Christine Fitzgerald, who had been a close friend of and confidant of Princess Diana for 9 years, acknowledged as such by the media. Mm. But they fell out in the last little while before Diana was killed. But she told me about Mountbatten. She told me about Charles. She told me about what went on in the royal family, about the Satanism, about the pedophilia. And also what was left field for me at the time about Jimmy Savile, as others have too. And I said to them, you know, why would the royal family be so close to this aging disc jockey? And then they told me about the paedophilia and the necrophilia and all the rest of it. And so, because he was a procurer of children, it meant that he was never going to go down. So long as he kept quiet and you know, played the game as they wanted it played, mm-hmm. and doing what he was doing for them, he would never go down, because their backs and his back are the same back, because if he goes to court and starts blubbing, then they're in trouble. So this is one of the reasons that this secrecy and protection is so powerful within these paedophile and satanic rings, Henrik. It's because all the backs are dependent upon other backs not being, you know, collared for this stuff. So they support each other. And if you've got your people in the judiciary, in the law, in politics, in social services, in law enforcement, police and stuff, then you have, and in coroner's offices and all the rest of it, then you have the ring in the places that can put the lid on something and stop the truth coming out. This man, Thomas Hamilton, who shot all the children at the Dunblane school in Scotland in 1996. He was a procurer of children. He was a paedophile himself, but he was a procurer of children for the rich and famous. And what happens is one of two things. If you're doing that and you're playing the game, as Saville was, keeping his mouth shut, he actually did an interview with Esquire magazine in which he actually said that one of the reasons that he was liked by the royal family is that he was able to work, quote, deep cover and do things which no one knew he was doing. And he said that the royal family were always asking him to Buckingham Palace and Kensington Palace, where Princess Diana lived after the breakup with Charles, to Highgrove, Charles's country estate, and all the rest of it. And he said, oh, they like the way that I have a laugh and my sense of humor. Well, I don't think that one of the most powerful families on earth are going to allow and invite so constantly, so regularly, a aging disc jockey into their inner sanctum just because he's a good laugh. And also, according to Saville, he was invited to have Christmas dinner with Margaret Thatcher many, many times over the years when she was prime minister. And now the stories are starting to appear about the fact that Saville was providing children for a guy called Ted Heath. Well, Ted Heath was in my books, The Biggest Secret. It came out in 1998. When I named him, like, what, 5-7 years before he died, he was still a politician, as not just a practicing Satanist and pedophile, but a serial child killer. And the passage in the book was read to him by a journalist as soon as after it came out in 1998, and nothing happened because I was spot on with that, because I don't cross the line to naming people like that unless I've got a lot of research, and I'm absolutely sure I don't want to name people when it's not true.
Sure.
And he's been Heath has been connected to the Jersey Children's Home. That story that broke some years ago, and then the genuine police investigation was blocked, just as the one in Belgium was with Mark Dutroux.
That's right.
And Saville's connected to the same Jersey Children's Home. He denied through his lawyer when a newspaper mentioned some years ago, when the story broke about the Jersey home, that he had been there, and all, he denied he'd ever been there. And then pictures appeared of him with the kids. So all this stuff with Saville, I wrote an article at the weekend, and I called it Jimmy Saville, Doorway to the Cesspit, because he is. Because if you carry on researching through his own paedophilia, which is what the mainstream media in Britain are pretty much holding it at the moment, and you go into the procurement of children for the rich and famous that he was up to, then the questions the media are asking now is, how could he work at the BBC and he'd be abusing underage girls in BBC dressing rooms, and BBC people knew about it? How could he do this? How could he do that? How come he was never known? How come there wasn't an investigation? Well, once you take in or bring in he was procuring children for the rich and famous, then you know why none of that happened. And it is an opportunity to really lift the lid on some of this stuff, and for people to start to realize that, you know, it's not crazy to say these things have been going on. It is just telling the truth. In fact, he has a nephew, Jimmy Saville, called Guy Marsden, who's now he's 59. I think he's 59. And he talked to a newspaper recently after the Jimmy Savile story broke, in which he told a story of him and his mates. He comes from Leeds in the north of England, this area where Savile comes from and lived. And he said they ran away from Leeds, got on a train to London, and ended up at King's Cross Station in London, which is a notorious place for paedophiles picking up kids who've run away from home. And he said they got to Euston Station, and they were picked up by this sleazy guy and taken to this grubby flat. He said about 4 days later, Jimmy Saville, his uncle, turns up at the flat, this grubby flat. And it turns out it's a coincidence. He doesn't know his nephew's there, because his nephew's not told anybody, he hasn't told his parents or anything. But Saville's turned up, not because his nephew's there, but to meet the sleazy guy who picked him up at Euston Station. And when Saville saw his nephew, you know, the nephew says in this interview, I thought I was in trouble because I'd run away from home and hadn't told my parents where I was. But no, he said what Jimmy Savile did, Uncle Jimmy, is he just took them to a better place. And it was the plush home of some pop music impresario, as he says, but he didn't name him. And the this plush place and one or two others he was taken to with his mates were the venues for paedophile parties when famous people in film, television, everything, entertainment, came and abused these kids, but never abused the kids from Leeds. They were left out of it, probably because of, you know, it was Jimmy Savile's nephew. But Jimmy Savile, he said, would bring children to the parties, and he said sometimes he would come with a man dressed as a priest, which made them think that, hey, these kids are coming from children's homes, which is exactly right. First of all, you have these bloodlines which are genetically and for other reasons addicted to paedophilia, and then you need to satisfy that demand, shall we say,
right,
you people procuring children for those people. And the people procuring them need children to procure. And what they do, they target? They target children's homes where the parents are not there to look after them. Often people in the ring are on the staff in the children's home, sometimes in completely staffing children's homes, some of them. And thus, every now and again, you have these paedophile children's home scandals which break, the lid gets on them, and people forget about it, and it carries on as before. And this is what's going on, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
People are going about their lives and watching the game show and watching the, you know, X Factor and all this stuff. This is what's happening in the world in the peripheral vision that you're not seeing.
Yeah, and it's also after, of course, he's dead and buried, that this comes out. This is at a time when he can't talk about it and potentially point any fingers that would implicate others that have been participating in these kinds of activities. How did this break, by the way? Who told the... Was there a BBC documentary about this, you said?
No. I said there's another story there, because we have a document... Well, no, not documentary, a current affairs program on BBC. It goes out every weeknight, quite late, called Newsnight, and it looks at the stories of the day and the stories of the time in more depth than the, you know, the news bulletins do.
Yeah.
And after his death in 2011, they began an investigation into the background to Jimmy Savile in terms of his paedophilia. But there is going to be a so-called independent investigation into this. People don't know why. The investigation at a late stage before broadcast was blocked and stopped from being made public. And one of the suggestions is it's because the BBC at that time had a series of programs all ready to go, eulogizing this wonderful man, Jimmy Savile, and all the great work he did and all the rest of it. And they didn't want to spoil that party. But whatever was the reason, it was suppressed.
Yeah.
What actually happened, it came out of nowhere, really, is that it was suddenly announced that this independent television documentary was going out expose Jimmy Savile's paedophilia against underage girls who'd come forward. And there was a great friend, an associate of Jimmy Savile, called Jonathan King, who was a pop impresario, could well have been the one this nephew was talking about. And he went to jail a few years ago for paedophilia. And there was another guy, another friend of a close friend of Jimmy Savile, called Gary Glitter, a pop star, who also went to prison for paedophilia. But, you know, Jimmy Savile was Teflon man and stayed out of the loop. And the person that the police investigator who put Jonathan King away was actually the man who did the investigation for the program and came up with the story that he did. But what happened with that is that it breached the dike. it was interesting in and of itself that it exposed Savile up to a point with underage girls. But what has followed that, Henrik, is just an explosion of other people coming forward now with the confidence to that they're going to be listened to at last.
Right.
About a week ago, I've not seen it since, but about a week ago, the police said they were up to 340 leads in the investigation into Savile's activities. Well, as I said at the time, think of any number you like, double it and multiply it, and then you'll get something like the number of victims of Savile over 50 years and more, 50, 60 years.
Wow. Yeah, more of this is being revealed every day now. It's horrible stuff, but at least it's coming to the surface. Yep. And as we have said many times before, at least when we begin to find out, we can do something about it, get it into the mass consciousness, and then hopefully at some point be able to prevent all of this as well. We need to begin to wrap things up here in a little bit here now, David, but I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit more about the Wembley event, obviously how people can get tickets, and again, just the details about how people can view it online if they can't make it there for themselves. So it's about a week away now on the 27th of October. So give us the details and the websites and everything, David.
Well, it's real simple. If you go into davidicke.com and you can go to the homepage, but it's better to go to the headlines page, and it will be right in front of you. You can get tickets through the Wembley Arena box office, through the site, and you can subscribe to the global streaming live through the website as well, just a little bit further down, but not much. And what I'm saying to people is that, you know, in terms of the cost of the streaming, it's £15 for the entire event, plus the fact that for a month afterwards until the 26th of November, you'll be able to watch the event as many times as you want and show it to as many people as you want within the same price. And also, if people are finding, you know, even £15 difficult, well, just get more people in front of one screen, and you can bring the cost down to virtually nothing. You know, get five people in front of one screen. That's £3. £3 each for a 12-hour event of information that is just going to go so deep in the rabbit hole. It's unbelievable. And this is the culmination of something, you know, I've been working on and working on with a very, very small number of other people around me for a while, and that's to create an event which will give people all over the world the ability to see this information put together without even leaving their homes in terms of the streaming. But also, you know, again, got to get beyond on the five senses. It's about bringing people together energetically. It's about connecting their focus upon the event into a mass connection of hearts and minds, which will create a tremendously powerful energy field based on that arena. And that arena and that area is in among some serious energy lines, meridian lines that passing through London, which is one of the heart centers of the global conspiracy, or lack of heart centers. But London is a major, major point on the global energy grid. That's why they've focused so much of their manipulation out of London, because they play and manipulate and use the energies and suppress the energies. If you can find major points on the global energy grid and you can do very, very malevolent things there, you push that malevolence into the entire energy field, the energy sea that we're all living amongst, from that key energy access point, that vortex point. And London's a massive one. So this is not just about London. This is about that energy field we call London and its effect on the entire energy field that the entire humanity is interacting with all the time. So it's working on multiple levels. And the whole of the last 2 hours of the event will be all about building this energy up, changing the nature of the energy, and making an impact upon the energy field. And before then, it will be just amazing information connected together. And it's in many ways what I've been working towards for this last 23 years. I didn't know I was until the last 12 months or so, but I was. And I'm I've put everything else on hold. You know, people are asking me to do this, do that, go here, go there. I've said I'm not saying yes to anything or no to anything until Wembley. I want to see what impact this has in the month afterwards and what it generates or doesn't generate or whatever, and then see where we go from there. But, I think it's a really, really important event in the history of this whole awakening global conspiracy exposure movement. I really do. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm going to enjoy it because it's been a long time coming.
Definitely. It's a great idea. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. By the way, I want to mention here before we wrap things up with you, David, that Karina, a listener here in Sweden, bought two tickets to this event a while back now, and she actually couldn't make it because of some other circumstances, but she gave these to us to basically, you know, she donated these to us to give away. So we are going to, well, we're going to do some kind of simple draw based on email addresses, I think, from the first maybe 50 or 100 or so emails that comes into us showing an interest in the tickets. They're on row 21, she told me, by the way. And I'm going to give out the complete details of this at the end of the program. So stay with us to be, you know, if you want to be a part of this and if you want to have a chance to get two tickets to this event at Wembley with David Icke. And I'll provide all the instructions as well later. And it's important you follow these. Otherwise, you won't be able to kind of participate in this. And I also want to mention that you obviously have to get yourself to Wembley, to London, arrange accommodation and everything that for yourself. These are just the tickets, so it's important that you understand this. But more details about that upcoming here after we say bye to David. So again, enjoy a David Icke marathon here next Saturday. And again, as David said, more information at davidicke.com. All the information is right there on the front page. Thank you for talking with us again, David. Have a great time at Wembley and keep up the great work.
Thank you. You too.
All right, let me give you the fine print here about the two tickets that we want to give to one of you to the event with David Icke at Wembley in about a week from now, the 27th of October in London, England, to be specific. It's very limited time left, and for this reason, we unfortunately need to limit this draw to our British audience this time. The reason for this is that we need not only to get the tickets off to you in time via snail mail, but you need to arrange travel and accommodation and everything else because, as I said, this is your responsibility. So again, this is only concerning the two tickets to the event itself that we give up. So preferably, we would want to give this to a Londoner so we know that they will be put to use. But I think anyone in the UK can be part of this and that can make this on a short notice. These tickets were sent to us by a listener who couldn't make it to the event just a few days ago, hence it's very tight for time on this one. So we apologize for that, but it's better, I think, that the tickets come to use. So again, if you're in England, preferably London, send us an email, and you need to send it to iketickets@redicecreations.com. Include your mail address in this, mailing address, in this email. And just to be clear here, don't send us a Facebook message or respond to our newsletter or anything like that. You need to send us an email to the right address, otherwise you won't be part of the draw. iketickets@redicecreations.com. And again, include your mailing address, and based on this, we'll know that they go off to England as well. So be as quick as you can, because we, when we get in about 50 emails or so on this, we'll print these out. We'll put them in a jar and draw one, and we'll notify you via email, and we'll send off the tickets to these two as soon as possible so you and a friend or a family member can go there and attend. And so since this program is not live, this is how we'll do it this time. And we'll announce the winner on the program page at redicecreations.com for this program with David Icke. So you can go there if you want to see the results. But you'll know pretty quick, pretty early in the process if your name is drawn. So again, send it to iketickets@redicecreations.com. All right, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on Sunday with more radio. Mike Cross on society, individualism, psychology, psychopathy, and the upcoming presidential selection in the US. And after this, we have some great programs coming up. Seth Farber and Paul Levy on the spiritual gift of madness. Then we have Kent Bain and Chris Milligan on 9/11 as a mass ritual. We also have Dean Clifford, Nick Begich, Scott Onstott with Dan Tatman and Kevin McMahon. Carol Sabik de la Heran on Robert Monroe, And we also have George Kevassalas, Troy McLaughlin, Randy Powell, and Richard Cassaro coming on the program. For the whole Red Eyes crew, we wish you a great rest of your day. Take care, stay sharp, and we'll talk more soon.